This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Beth Voorhees. An early morning fire yesterday devastated the historic commercial district of downtown Harpers Ferry. Liz McCormick visited the site and brings us this report.
Locals and tourists alike lined High Street in Harpers Ferry Thursday morning, watching on as dozens of firefighters and police officers continued to work to contain the fire. The smell of burnt buildings lingered throughout the historic town on the edge of the Potomac River. Pieces of burnt wood, fabrics, and other odds and ends littered the streets, some things unable to be identified. Jeff Gaskins lives next door to the shops that caught fire.
It was just up in flames. Everybody lost their businesses down here, down on this side. It was just awful. It was just chaos.
The fire started around 3 a.m., engulfing four buildings that contained eight shops and two apartments. A few of those buildings were built in the 1800s, some long before the Civil War. Cindy Dunn lost her shop to the fire, a boutique called The Vintage Lady.
We sell a lot of made in West Virginia items, and that was kind of my niche, made in America, made in West Virginia.
Many of Dunn's items were jewelry. Another shop sold things like Harpers Ferry souvenirs, candles, handbags, Civil War reproductions, and there was even a dog accessory shop. A popular pub was also devastated by the fire.
It's a personal, of course, loss, huge loss, but the loss for our town is devastating. This is such a beautiful town, and people come here literally from all over the world.
It took almost 8 hours to put out the fire. Ronnie Schutz, the fire chief for Friendship Fire Company, points to the wreckage.
This building here, it was pretty well off, and the stairway going down to those other two buildings, it was all on fire.
Schutz says 25 firefighter units from Maryland, Virginia, and West Virginia came to help, with a total of 80 firefighters on the scene.
As far as I'm concerned, everybody did a great job. I mean, you know, we couldn't have done any more than what we did, you know, to protect the rest of the stuff here and to actually extinguish this fire.
Locals are in shock and heartbroken for the loss. I watched as many shop owners tried to salvage what they could find, reaching through burned window frames. Dunn shows me some things she was able to save: a burned mug with a Harpers Ferry logo, some magnets, and a little decorative star very dear to her.
This isn't going to put me down. I need to get to point B, but no, this is, I love what I do, and I'll figure something out.
The cause of the fire is still under investigation, but the people of Harpers Ferry are standing together, already talking of rebuilding. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Liz McCormick in Harpers Ferry.
The city of Charleston used to be one of the nation's final two newspaper towns, but no longer. Earlier this week, the Charleston Daily Mail and the Charleston Gazette combined to form the Charleston Gazette Mail. Publisher Susan Shoemate says that financial pressures made the combination necessary. A federal agency recently filed a $1.3 million lien against the newspaper for missing payments to its pension plan, according to the West Virginia Record. But in an interview with West Virginia Public Broadcasting's Scott Finn, Shoemate says the new newspaper will be more than the sum of its parts.
We didn't want either newspaper reader to feel like they were losing their paper's identity. We want them to be able to feel like they're going to get the same story that they had, and they're going to have the same syndicated columnists that they enjoyed, and they are going to have the same crossword puzzle and the same comics and the same things that they enjoyed prior to the combining of the two newspapers.
So they're going to feel like this is an addition to their newspaper subscription and not a taking away.
I certainly hope so.
Over the last several days, we've seen some examples of this. I saw two reporters covering the landslide at the Eager Airport, one from the meeting angle and one from out in the field.
Right. And so it's been great to be able to have those two reporters covering different aspects of a story. It's also been nice to see where they may not be sharing sources, they're definitely sharing information that they're getting from their sources. And it's making the stories better, and they're deeper, and to me, a little more fulfilling when I read it.
How do you figure out how to make money off of this? I imagine that the Charleston Gazette and the Charleston Daily Mail receive a lot of web traffic. But how do you monetize that?
You know, that's the question every news organization is asking right now. And it's very difficult, and it's an industry-wide question, and one that nobody really has a great answer for. That's not what you wanted to hear, but...
I don't have an answer either. We're in the same boat.
You know, every conference that you go to, it has something to do with how are you going to monetize the web traffic? And there's no easy answer for it.
So this was announced on Sunday afternoon. It was exactly 5 years after a federal agreement basically expired that allowed you to make this decision. Let me confirm. Was that the reason that was the day that was picked?
It is. And it was a financial necessity for the paper if we wanted to maintain a strong newsroom. You know, if we had wanted to start making cuts to the Gazette staff and the Daily Mail staff, you know, that's what the budget would have demanded. And I don't think that either newspaper would have made it out being a strong newspaper if there had been any more cuts made in those newsrooms.
And I read it would go from 78 people to about 65. Is that right?
That is right. That's the number that we're sort of looking to get to.
How do you get there?
Well, we are doing a reapplication process. They will give us a cover letter and their resume, but also include in there certain skills that we may have never known that they had because we didn't have the availability to do it. The Gazette newsroom right now is at 45. The Daily Mail newsroom has a capacity of 33, but they have 32. So with a newsroom of 65, you're looking at a much deeper newsroom than either paper had previously, which I think is really the key because we can have a separate desk for web services. We can have a separate desk for video. I don't know that that's where we'll go with these, but our jobs will be posted by the 31st. And by then, we will have sort of been able to dream up the super newsroom or the dream newsroom.
Is part of this the reason to have people reapply so that you can see what people's skills are and try to build this new newsroom based on that information?
Absolutely. And there might be somebody who's covering something they really don't like.
Maybe it's possible that there's a topic that you guys aren't even covering yet.
You know, we've already started getting emails from our staff saying, they're doing this in this city. Wouldn't this be fantastic for us to do here in Charleston? And it's great seeing the staff in the newsrooms putting their stamp of what they think the newsroom of the future will be.
Susan Shumate is publisher of the Charleston Gazette Mail. We really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us today.
Well, thank you for inviting me to be here.
You can hear more from this interview, such as why the Gazette Mail announcement came on a Sunday, on our podcast, The Front Porch. Find it on iTunes, SoundCloud, or our website, wvpublic.org. And tune in to The Front Porch this afternoon at 4:50. This is West Virginia Morning at 7:52. Some fog this morning, mostly sunny skies today, temperatures in the 70s and 80s, mostly sunny on Saturday. There's a slight chance of rain and thunderstorms on Sunday.
Support for our weather forecast is provided by Erie Insurance, putting service first since 1925. Local agents available at erieinsurance.com.
We continue to check in at the Augusta Heritage Center at Davis and Elkins College this week, where they're celebrating Irish Week. The Week of Gaelic Music and Classes was founded in 1982 and is the oldest Irish-themed music and dance week of its kind in the country. Andrew Carroll reports that Irish Week has been changing the course of lives for 33 years, and it continues to do so.
Ten years ago, Jenny Shilliday was teaching classical music and decided she wanted a change. So she came to the Augusta Heritage Center of Davis and Elkins College to connect with her roots by learning how to sing in Irish from Bridget Fitzgerald.
And I came here and I found not only was Bridget a wonderful teacher and the whole Augusta world incredibly supportive, the whole folky world that I suddenly was immersed in for a week was so, people were bending over backwards to help you if you were genuinely interested in learning. So although it was a great week and I went home and back in a way to my regular life, but it was life-changing. Now, 10 years later, I come back every year to study with Bridget, and I've taken a few other classes here too, and picked up Irish instruments. I did not play instruments before. And I teach for Crescendo Academy of Music in Kalamazoo, and I teach for DEMA in Detroit, and do some guest artist work, and that's full-time for me now. So. And that would not have happened if I had not come to Augusta.
And the changes didn't end there.
In fact, I even indirectly met my husband through Augusta because I got into that world and started co-hosting Irish sessions and singer sessions. This nice tall fiddler walked into one day and we struck up a conversation and now we're married.
This year, Jenny is sharing Augusta with a new generation. She brought 9-year-old Maggie Hillard, one of her students from the Detroit Irish Music Association School, to Augusta. Maggie and her father, Mike, are here to nurture Maggie's passion for singing and also connect with her Irish heritage. Maggie discovered her love for singing almost by accident. She was taking Irish dance lessons when her instructor noticed her singing as they danced and suggested they compete in the next Irish singing contest in Detroit. She won the competition.
I just like how it makes me feel like I'm doing what I was meant to do. And yeah, it just makes me feel like I belong singing.
Maggie continued to sing and recently won the Midwest FLA in both Irish and English singing and a chance to compete in the All-Ireland FLA in Sligo, Ireland this August. Maggie's teacher thought the best way to prepare Maggie to sing in Ireland was for her to be able to learn from her own teacher. So they came to Augusta to study Irish Shano singing with Bridget Fitzgerald. In addition to singing, Maggie is learning how to play penny whistle with Nora Rendell and is staying up late doing what she loves most, singing. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Andrew Carolyn Elkins.
Roane County, West Virginia native Dave Bing is a veteran fiddle player, a fiddle teacher and musician with decades performing throughout the United States and abroad. Here he is, backed by fellow West Virginia native Ben Townsend with Red Mountain Wine on this Mountain Stage Song of the Week.
Satisfied, got nothing to do but long for a dime for that Red Mountain wine. Got a farm in West Virginia and a home in Tennessee. Boxcar in Missouri and a jet in Waikiki. But I'm satisfied, got nothing to do but pawn for a dime for that Red Mountain wine.
Dave Bing and Ben Townsend with Red Mountain Wine. You can hear this song again and more music Saturday night at 8 on Mountain Stage right here on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Keep up with all the latest news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. West Virginia Morning is produced with the assistance of Suzanne Higgins, Clark Davis, Jessica Lilly, Glynis Boer, Dave Mistich, Roxy Todd, Liz McCormick, and Jesse Wright. Our theme music is by Matt Jackford. Our producer is Ashton Mara. Our director is Teresa Wills. I'm Beth Voorhees.